Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. When I hit record, I did say so we can mark it episode for the elderly, but it's not true. Phil said, "What was that joke?"
I resemble that remark.
I resemble that remark. And what was so funny though is I was going to say, even as we were started recording now, is it's funny because you guys are absolutely in that age, but you do not resemble. I met someone in their 60s the other day. They felt like 100. I mean, I could not believe, like, life had been hard to them. And so it's so interesting because you guys are definitely number wise, 65, 73, almost 74.
Almost 65.
Yeah. By the time this airs,
you'll be 65.
So, but that said, it's so interesting because I have to remind myself, like, oh, yeah, yeah, you guys are absolutely in that age and stage because I will meet people and, oh, I mean, I have an uncle right now who's 70, and I'm telling you, when I was talking with him, I was like, he acts and operates like he's 85 or 90, like can barely move. And there's some 85 and 90 year olds that are killing it. I love that. But man, it's a reminder. So thank you for being not only young at heart, but in spirit. And, but you know, obviously we're joking around, but today's episode, we're going to talk about just a lot of these different dynamics with adult relationships with adult kids. You're still laughing over there.
I'm laughing because when we first got married at the church we were part of in the Bay Area, the seniors group was called the Young at Heart.
That's what the seniors.
Now I resemble that remark.
I was
like 20, 26 or 27. Now I'm in that group.
Wow. Well, we might have to say to everybody listening, thank you so much for subscribing. Thank you so much for leaving a comment. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please feel free to just rate, subscribe to the podcast so you know when it comes out. Even leave us a comment there. That's really helpful. And then YouTube, you can subscribe there. That's great. Give us a thumbs up. Even leave a comment. That's helpful. So wherever you're at, thank you for everybody that's done that. We love you so much. Appreciate you so much for doing that. It's such a gift. And for those who listen week in and week out, we have folks, we just got a nice sweet note in the mail from somebody. Somebody sent us something in the mail. Yes, you heard me right. Physical mail. And they had said that they look forward to, you know, each week, listening in each week. And I was like, that's such a level of commitment. I can barely stand myself for 10 minutes. So thank you for all those that listen and are about it. So today, Elizabeth, why don't you set up this episode? I know you, this was actually from a kind of from your heart, from different conversations I know we've had with different friends, but especially some of your friends as well. So I think it'd be great if you set this episode up today to talk about the episode for the elderly.
That's
not what we're calling it.
Okay, I'm going to set up the problem, which is very depressing, but you guys are going to talk about all the hope and the solution. But I've just been struck over the last couple years. I feel like one of the main things that maybe my peers and those who are maybe even a little bit younger than us parenting, who are parents, one of their main questions and things they want to talk about is they see the relationship that we have and the role that you play in our kids' lives. And obviously, we're so open about it on the podcast. But that is not the norm. And one of the main things people want to talk to me about is the fact that they're struggling with their parents. Mm-hmm. And usually it's things like, it feels like they're being very critical of my parenting. They want me to do it exactly like they did, which doesn't work the same way. I'd feel like all they do is criticize, or they're basically absent. Yeah. They want to live the retired life. I would like them involved more, but they show no interest in being involved. And then oftentimes it's a combination of both. They're not involved, but when they are here, it's just tense and they're critical. Yeah. And it's usually the parents our age or around our stage who are, they're desperately wanting something more. And they don't know how to help their parents want it, how to cast a compelling vision. So it's something I talk to people a lot about and find it so sad as I sit and listen. And a lot of the situations can feel hopeless at times where I don't really know what to tell you unless your parents want it. It really has to come from them. And then at the same time, and I think we've talked about this on the podcast probably here and there, but I feel like we're in this moment in time that probably started a long time ago, but is especially true now, where a lot of my generation and your generation probably too, but especially mine, we've lost the ability to see context. And to so we have done a disservice to our adult parents and grandparents. And with all the new stuff we're learning, with all the neuroscience, with all the psychology, we can often look at your generation or our grandparents and just say they got it all wrong and be critical and say we want nothing to do with parenting in that way and be critical of the spirituality, of the parenting methods, of all of it. And with totally losing the ability to see the context of what was happening in the church at large when you were parenting us, what did you come from? What, you know, because as soon as you can do that, you can have compassion on the areas that maybe they missed. Just like our kids someday are going to say, man, you way overdid it in these three areas or underdid it in these areas, you know. And I hope that they can see context of what we were faced with, you know. So it's like this two angles of the grandparents not having been given a compelling vision of what their role is now. And a lot of like, well, they turned 18 and my job is done. And so they're lacking a compelling vision and models of what it can look like. And then my generation wants it, but is often criticizing their parents for everything they didn't do. And so what it seems to create in the, like, I'm not talking the extremes of like extremely dysfunctional, unhealthy family that you need to separate from. Talking about usually good-hearted, no parents are perfect, nobody is perfect, usually generally good-hearted parents who maybe either know Jesus or are just generally good-hearted people. Okay, that's kind of the framework that we're working with here. But what I see happening left and right is there's just distance because the grandparents have not opened the door for conversation. They don't even know how. The adult children feel like anytime they try to talk about it, there's defensiveness and they just feel like they get nowhere. And so there's just this division and there's this distance that is really seeming to grieve the heart of the my generation more than it's even grieving the heart of the grandparents sometimes.
We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying. Honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me," God says, "and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you.
With all that said, I feel like...
Oh, you're still going? I thought that was...
No, that's the setup. Like, I'm about to pass the baton. I know.
This is good.
That's the setup.
It's good.
But
it's good.
I feel like you guys... Your best stage of parenting has been you parenting your adult children. And maybe you would say there's other stages that you feel like you did better in or whatever. But in my lived experience, obviously I can't remember the early, early years, but I think one of your best stages has been your adult kids. And there's a whole host of reasons I could get into of why, and I'm sure they'll evolve as we start to talk about it. But I think who better... having getting to live it with you, to cast a compelling vision for maybe grandparents that are listening, or maybe our peers that are listening who don't have a lot of hope that things are going to change within their current family context, but they want to do it differently with their adult children. And I think this is the best time to start thinking about it, is when your kids are little, when they're in your home, start to think about, what do I want that relationship to be like when I'm not their authority anymore? And when they have lives of their own, kids of their own, what role is mine to play? So I kind of want to pass the baton to you and stop talking and pass it to you guys and just get you to start talk about, like, where did your vision for this stage of life even come from? I don't think you had a clear one. I think it's kind of evolved. But, like, what is your vision for your role in this stage in your life?
You are enjoying content brought to you by Intentional, a crowdfunded nonprofit that desires to help families and marriages all around the world in the area of discipleship and spiritual formation. This offering is completely free, thanks to the generosity of our growing community of Legacy Builders. Legacy Builders is a group of people from all over the world that gives monthly to fuel this dream that we have in our hearts of seeing discipleship to Jesus in the family become a way of life. A monthly gift of $5, $10, or even $30 can continue to fuel this ministry forward. Our dream is to invite people like you to join and partner with us at a financial level and to see this work integrated into families. So as you listen to this podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us? Would you allow the Spirit to lead you, even if it's just a few dollars a month? Thank you so much. And may the Spirit of Jesus give you wisdom, clarity, and joy as you pray about joining us. If you want to join today, go to intentionalparents.org and click on Give.
I think the vision for where we wanted to go as grandparents, the seed of the beginning, and I'm not sure it's fully developed yet, and I think it'd be really, this is compelling just listening to you, thinking, I really want to define this well for myself, but
here's a messy future version. Books for you to write and a whole future ministry for you to start. So,
but I would say two people passed on some vision for me and the history of hearing about a third. Number one, Ruth Comer, like the hero of our family, Phil's mom, Ruth, was the picture of the kind of woman I want to be in all my relationships, where she never read one thing on attachment theory or neurobiological responses to life. She was raised in a difficult, you know, alcoholic, binge alcoholic father, beautiful mother who died way too young.
Yeah.
But she made me feel seen. She made me feel safe. She soothed me. And I was completely secure. I'm her daughter-in-law. Made me feel
secure. Those are a lot of S's. Secure. Go over those S's again. They're all S's.
It's the basic S's of attachment theory. Yeah. Seen.
Yes.
She saw me. And she saw me actually more clearly than I saw myself. Because I was still trying to live up to an expectation that I was never going to be able to live up to. And she saw me. She made me feel safe. With her, I could say anything. I used to, you know, before we talked about therapist, I used to call her my psychologist. Just go over and talk to Mom C. She soothed me always. She was a soothing person. So in seen and safe, she soothed me. And therefore, in my relationship with her, I was utterly secure. And I feel like she reparented me. She gave me what my mom was not capable of giving me, and she gave it with no fanfare. She was not like this dominant, she didn't have a ton of charisma, you wouldn't say. She was just beautiful.
Well, kids call that Riz now. That's Riz called now. Riz. I know. Yeah, a ton of Riz.
W Riz.
And so she was my first example of, oh my gosh, I want to be like her. And then Lori Kies, our mentors who are in their 80s now. We were on a trip to a staff retreat from our church in Portland. and that we were leading, and we invited them to come and speak with and be with the staff, because we just, they're really valuable people. And Tammy, my daughter-in-law Tammy and I were in the car with her, and we were really looking forward to the three-hour drive, because guys had gone up sooner, that we could just pester her with all sorts of questions. She's so wise. Well, she was on her phone the entire time, because it was one grandchild after another calling her. This was like in June. One calling her that he had gotten a chair position in this orchestra, and he was all excited about it. She talked forever to him about asking all these questions. He was like 17.
Yeah.
Another granddaughter calling about a relationship thing, really wanting their grandmother to just be proud of them, basically affirm them. Mm-hmm. And I, at the end of that trip, I just remember thinking, and you know, my grandkids at that point were very, very little, thinking, oh my gosh, she has spent their whole lives pouring into them so that now they're calling grandma. I mean, I never had a grandma that I could call and be interested in me.
Yeah.
So I think those two people were the first to show at least me what a grandparent could be in the lives of their grandkids. What about you, Phil?
Well, you still got me stuck in my mom.
I know.
I grieved her passing for a year and a half.
I still grieve.
I think of her every day.
I still grieve, Dad.
I still grieve, but I mean, remember I blew up my favorite picture of her looking all late 1940s gorgeous in Carmel.
Yeah.
And I couldn't, for the memorial service, sitting there on the table, I couldn't throw the big one away. And you were so sweet to me.
Of course.
You said, that's okay, take it home.
Yeah.
I said, I can't throw this away, even though I had the little picture. And so I stuck it, you know, across from my desk. And a year after her passing, I couldn't get rid of it. And you said, that's okay.
Keep it up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, so that was my mom. Yeah. And I think of her, we say that Matthew, our son Matthew's wife, Simona, she never met my mom. You're like Grandma Ruth. You're like, we call her Sweet Simona.
Yeah.
So I think that what you're talking about, my mom, is the influence she had in your life. But then she did the same thing for our kids. Yeah. She welcomed Elizabeth and John Mark and Matthew and loved them like, you know, cooked for them. And what's your favorite meal? And
always thought the best of them.
Yeah. And, you know.
Like I picked them up from, you know, when you kids were in those ages where you were hard, there were lots of those ages, and we'd go pick them up from her watching them, even if it was like a couple of days. And I'd say something like, okay, mom, really, you know, how was it really?
Mm-hmm.
Never did she ever say anything that had gone wrong. It was always, oh, it was wonderful. They were great. They were awesome. And I'd think, this cannot be true.
I know that.
But I appreciate it so much, instead of pointing out all the things that you know, I wasn't doing right, or the kids weren't living up to. She was just so full of love.
Yeah.
So, an example. Okay.
So my parents were always available to our kids.
That's true.
To us. Yeah. Always available to us.
Yeah, they were.
Anytime we needed to talk to them.
Yeah, what does that mean? Flesh that out, what that means.
Practically.
Yeah.
You mean practically.
They were available to talk with you. Kind of sounds like, practical.
They were retired. My dad retired, you know, in his late 50s. So, you know, they had time.
Okay.
But they didn't do this selfish thing like, we're going to move away to whatever, you know, Florida or Hawaii. Because we're going to go where we want to go. And if you want to fly the kids to us once a year, great. We'll take them to the beach. You know, it was like they didn't live for themselves. I mean, my mom poured out her life for her three sons. And then each of us left the house. They got another dog. She ended up with three dogs. You know, so she was a nurturer. And my dad was fun and solid and there. And so they were available to us.
And by practically, that meant like a Memorial Day weekend, if we called Friday night and said, hey, can we come over? it was always yes.
Oh, sure.
It was always yes. And they weren't flashy about what they do, but they would make time, just make time to take kids to the, up to the pool in their community and
cook your favorite meal. You know, my mom knew what we loved. She showed her love through food for cooking, and but she wouldn't. Well, I'm making this tonight, so I hope you eat your vegetables. You know, she was like, I'm gonna bless you. I'm going to lavish love on you. Yeah. So they were available. They were lavish, simple, but and they were involved. As involved, they didn't demand anything from us or from our kids. They were there to receive and to give and to bless. And I think I think that's the way it should be, because at that stage you don't have the burden of young children, the disciplining. That's your calling as a parent, to raise them up. You get to come alongside and reinforce what your kids are doing and enjoy them, you know. I mean, Pastor Greg Laurie's joke is that grandchildren are God's reward for what you had to put up with your raising your kids. You know, it's like what he's talking about there is it's hard work raising kids. But when you're a grandparent, you don't have to carry that burden. You can enjoy them in a different way and you can love them. And, you know, the joke is spoil them and give them anything they want. You know, there's some truth to that. but I think being able to, they came alongside. They were available. They were lavish. They came alongside, and I think they cared, even before they were. I was baptized my dad when he was 67. I was 66. So they were. That's when I knew they were saved and followed. They followed Jesus the last period of their life.
Wow.
Before that, they were, you know, good, just
good, God
fearing, solid, involved parents. But my dad was always like that. He was involved.
Whatever I was interested in,
he was interested in. You know, coached me in Little League. When I was playing in a rock band, he came to hear the rock band play. Great band, son. When I was preaching my first sermon, great sermon, son. So, you know, and then he just continued to be that person into his older age. So my brothers and I, none of us would say that my parents weren't interested in us. They were, they showed their interest in us. So I think that's what we want to do as grandparents is be interested, involved, available. You know, we're not retired because we have a calling, ministry calling, but we're trying to figure it out because we have 9 grandkids now and 4 of them are 1,000 miles away and one's 3 hours away. So, you know, Matt, Simona, and the new baby. So we haven't figured it out yet, but it, to me, it's like, wow, what a privilege. It's like, you know, if I'm going to stay alive, it's like the family, I mean, our family has been given to us by God, and your children are our grandchildren. I mean, part of us is in them. So it's like, and so we view it as like, wow, we get to do this. Like, and so, you know, I'm just going to read a scripture because you got to let me read a scripture, right? Proverbs 13:22. A good man leaves an inheritance, you'd think it would say to his children. It says to his children's children. That's the verse. To his son's sons, you know, and daughters. So that's talking about money, but it's more than money. It's you're leaving an we're leaving an inheritance to Duke and Scarlett and Birdie and Sloan and, so, you know, I can name them all, but I won't. But I mean, to all of them. So Sunday right now calls Diane, wants to talk to her every week.
That's great.
So she is getting something that we didn't get from, we weren't close, neither one of us, to our grandparents. You know, and so one of them died when I was, I don't remember her because she held me as a baby, but then she died of cancer, my mom's mom.
Oh,
but my mom just tells me that she was the only one that I would let hold, that could hold me besides my mom. So she was a gentle, my mom was probably like her mom, but she died when I was a, you know, baby. And then her father lived in our house for a little bit, but was distant. He was the one that would be a binge alcoholic. So in his later years, he lived in our house for a while, but was stoic, no involvement. And then my dad's parents knew a little bit. I remember staying at their house occasionally, but it was kind of odd and the food was terrible. And so we didn't have like warm fuzzies for them. You know?
But I want to highlight that because I think that's really hopeful that you guys were so heavily impacted by how your parents' dad chose to be grandparents yeah. in their involvement in your lives personally and then in the lives of your kids.
Yes.
And they did not have good models
no.
of what that looked like.
No.
Nor did they got saved later in life. It's not like they had this deep spiritual family that had taught them a different way. I think that's really hopeful mm-hmm. because, you know, Brooke, you talk a lot about this of like you're giving your kids, you're parenting your kids very different than what your lived experience was. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you can wonder like, is that going to work? Is that going to stick? Yeah. Like, to me, those stories are so hopeful because it's so very possible, mm-hmm. you know? And I think then what that did just one generation down, you know, they did a great job, but now the impact you guys are having is, I think Grandma and Grandpa Comer did such an amazing job with just presence mm-hmm. and delight, but you've added now intention to that. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. Mom, you are so, you so deeply, and this I think you learned from Lori, who you mm-hmm. shared about, you so deeply want to not only know all of your grandkids individually and your adult kids and mm-hmm. their spouses. Mm-hmm. It's so important to you that you know them individually mm-hmm. and don't just parent them or have relationship with them in the masses.
Right, the kids.
Yes, but you know my kids so deeply, their weaknesses, their strengths, their vulnerabilities, and you do the same with us as adult kids, and you're so present to Brooke. You know him so, you forget that he's your son-in-law quite often. So I just think that's the power of what can happen and yeah. as generations yeah. build yeah. on this. But what would you say are like, I want to get into some of the practical. Mm-hmm. Like you gave some of the history of the things that impacted you, but what are some things that you have been doing? Because now you've been at this a while. I mean, mm-hmm. the John Mark is how old? He's 5 years younger
he's
than
gonna
me.
He's going to be 44.
He's going to be 44
in okay. a couple weeks.
So you've had adult children for quite a while who are all very different. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. like John Mark and Tammy have been married how
20,
many years?
20 plus.
Yeah. 20 plus years. Mm-hmm. We've been married 17. Like yeah. you've had in-laws for a long time.
Yeah.
And your oldest grandchild is 18.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not new at this. I want to start with the adult child relationships. Okay. Like, I'll tell you what I remember. I think we won't talk about the teenage years. There was some yeah. high levels of fear
we'll
control
skip those.
In there. But the minute, I will never forget that I was the first girl to get married. So man, was that a process. It's amazing
yes,
that Brooke did not
Phil
run
made it
from
very hard.
You, Dad. We joke about it now. It was a little over the top. But
it was a lot of over the top.
The minute,
but it was good.
I feel like it was as soon as we got engaged. He says it was when we got married, but doesn't matter. We weren't engaged very long.
I don't
the minute
I don't
we got married,
saying.
You guys made a total shift.
Yeah.
No, you like sat us down even like two nights before we got married and said, we won't have a key to, you can have a key to our house. We won't have a key to your house. This is your
space.
Yeah,
you're welcome now. Anytime, but we will only come over invited. And that was both practical and also like metaphorical. Would that be
yes,
the right word?
It was.
Yeah.
In a like, you have your own home and family now. Yeah. And if you invite us in, we will come in, but we will right. not barge our way in.
Right.
That was like very significant. You did yes. that with all of us. And then now we live a 3-minute walk from each other. And I think you still don't have a key to our house as much
no.
as it becomes problematic, but you're like, it's principle
nope,
now.
I don't want
we will not have a key to your house. But you started that the minute we got married. And you also started right away, you fully embraced who we married.
Yeah.
Never criticized them. You made a pact between the two of you. So let's start there.
Yeah.
And keep it on just your adult children for a little bit. And okay. then we can transition to what you've done it with your grandkids. We want to invite you to the Intentional Motherhood Retreat 2024. Last year, over 600 mothers gathered together to learn, to worship, both to encourage and to be encouraged. The Father spoke and the Spirit moved and Jesus healed. And it was so incredible that we cannot wait to do it again. We want to invite you October 3rd through 5th here in Bend, Oregon, where we live. We know that the journey of motherhood is both beautiful and it is hard.
It is both life-giving and exhausting at times. And we just want to create space for the Spirit to refresh you in your journey. We're going to lean in to how motherhood so gently and beautifully leads us in the way of spiritual formation. We're going to talk about how we need each other on the journey. We're going to talk about how our connection with God ultimately impacts the connection that we have with our kids. This retreat is both for mothers who desire to be mothers someday, all the way to grandmothers, and anywhere in between, because the truth is we all need each other. We need to learn from each other, and we need to be together. It was Dallas Willard who said, if you don't come apart for a while, you will come apart in a while. And that is especially true for us mothers. So we just invite you to come away with us. Let's see what the Spirit wants to do, and we can't wait to see you.
I mean, basically, that's what the Bible says in back in Genesis. A man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. Yeah. So as parents, you need to let them leave, but not abandon them.
Yeah.
So because, you know, like we'd say in parenting, even when your kids get, you know, college age, you have a different relationship. Like, so you're no longer over them like they're a little kid, but you're alongside of them. So I think definitely when they're married, you're available to help when called upon. But if you make the mistake of saying, hey, you know, I'm still your parent and you still are under me. Yeah. You know, I'm going to keep an eye on your, you know, the person you married, but you're, you know, I'm going to still control you. It's going to be disaster because God set it up for them to leave and establish their own home and raise their own kids.
So I do remember it. I think Phil really led us in this area. Like when John Mark and Tammy got married first, he very clearly stated to me,
I don't remember,
and
this.
To us, and I so remember this, that everything changes now, and that we would really let go of our kids, that they needed to figure things out themselves. They're no longer under even our guidance, really, unless they specifically ask us, and that we would let go. And so, because for me, learning some of these things the hard way from, you know, I mean, we can learn from the mistakes of our parents.
Yeah.
Because God wants to redeem everything. There was a lot of, in my home, just a lot of talking about family members, you know, criticizing behind our backs. And Phil was, you know, really helped set the precedent. And then we made a pact with ourselves that we would never criticize our kids or their spouses, no matter what, to each other, that we would never criticize them to anybody else. We would never mask it in prayer concern.
I have it unspoken for my son-in-law.
Right. Bless their hearts.
Right. But then we, and to me, I use the word loyalty, but not in the sense where you're covering up something, but loyalty in that these are my people and I have their back, and it's really important that they have the confidence to know that we have their back. And you guys were really young when you got married. How old were you, bro?
21.
21.
We were both 21.
So, you know, what 21-year-old guy has it all figured out? And if we were criticizing you or second-guessing you, how could you grow? How could you, you know? Instead, what we tried to do is come along and say, hey, we made a bunch of mistakes too, but, you know, this is, as mistakes go, this is a pretty small one. Learn on this small mistake. You know, we tried to be that kind of people to each other, and really imitating in a way what we now know of being seen. We wanted to see you. I want my grandkids to know that I see them and I see past their flaws to the real person that they are. And that's so fun. It's so different than when you're the parent and you're actually responsible to help shape them and to correct them and to teach and train them. Well, that's not my job. My job is to see Scarlett and Birdie and Sloan and Duke and all the others. My job is to see them and then just tell them what I see, the reflection of the beauty of God that I see in them individually. That is just fun. I mean, that just takes all the pressure off. And it's not like some fake cheerleader thing. It's like really being able to study and see who they are
and
repeat that back to them.
So not criticizing is a big, I mean, that's a big one in the sense of just even creating a healthy subculture, you know, even the culture within. I think you guys have also been very open to talk about things with your adult kids, meaning that if something's off or weird, you've invited everyone to be comfortable to talk with you about it, which I think so many parents don't understand that they hold a lot of the power in that dynamic. Yeah. And it's not power like over the kids, but in that dynamic, it's way easier for a parent to say, I'm open. Just talk to me about like, here's the door's open, rather than let me pound down the door to make sure. Cause there's a lot of parents that aren't open to it. And so I think that also has led to a certain level of openness and in the adult years for sure. Okay. I also think that you guys were really, even the setup, like you talked about the setup when you did actually say, okay, well, it's your family now. I know that might sound like a simple and maybe even just 10-minute thing, right? Maybe no more than 500 words in that whole thing. But that moment, it's a marked moment that you don't forget. And it's a really important one, I think, in the process of establishing family, because that is something I think a lot of families not only miss, but that the parents think that, no, you are still my kid and you owe me a certain level of commitment and connection and attention and time. There's all that built into this. I mean, it can be built into these unspoken expectations.
And a lot of times it's indirect. It's, we never see you. Yeah. We, you know. Yeah. But I think you guys made a really marked shift into a support role. And I think that's the role you've been playing ever since, is that now we are your support. We are like here for you in anything you need. We're your biggest cheerleader. We're your biggest fans. We believe in you. And you've just continued to do that over and over and over again for years and years and years. And then now do the same thing with our kids. And it's just so beautiful.
Well, that's the calling of a grandparent, you know, that I'm thinking of, is to undergird and reinforce. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so the thing about, you know, you're always your children's parent. You never are not. I'm still your father. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, but you're not a little kid anymore.
Yeah.
And you're teaching me.
Yeah.
And you're correcting me and you're discipling me. Yes. It's this beautiful relationship. And that happens really, especially clearly, the moment you accepted Christ as Savior and I baptized you at 10 years old.
Hmm.
Yeah, you're still my daughter, but you're not my sister in Christ. That's a cool thing. Mm-hmm. And so I think for a parent to recognize that is good. You know, let your teenager speak into your life. But for a grandparent to realize, you know, we're part of the bigger family of God. And so, but as a grandparent, we come alongside to help. And I think that yes, we let go, but it wasn't like we let go and said, see ya, we're moving to Maui, you know,
yeah.
Hope you have a nice life.
No, yes.
It's let go, but we're here and we're here to help, not to control. And so we choose not to criticize. And I can't be critical. Diane calls me on it if I get critical, but it's a choice that you make to see the best, believe the best, and how can we help? And so I think that to me, it's just like, wow, we get to do this. Like, we get to have influence. And so it gets practical. So like, I know you're having your kids read the scriptures in the morning. So when we had your kids for 8 days, I said to Duke and Scarlett first thing in the morning, you know, after I gave Panda Puffs to Bernie and Sloan, and Duke crawled out of my office sleeping on mats because there's no bedroom for him. You know, he's made his coffee and he wanted to whatever, you know, play a game on an iPad. I said, did you read your Bible yet? And he didn't say, I'm not going to read my Bible, because I just knew I could ask him that, because that's what you ask. And so you'd want him to read the Bible. So he grabbed the one I got when I was a kid in 1957. That's the one he kept reaching for, an old Revised Standard Bible that my mom gave to me, you know, and wrote in it. And that's the one he was going to. But that's just reinforcing something you want. So I think,
on the other hand, if you guys were not asking that of your kids, and if that had felt like a foreign language, we would not have asked that of them, because we wouldn't want to, like, parent over you guys.
Well, it would also be a weird and uncomfortable. It would create a weird subculture. Like, yeah, every time I'm at their house, that's this weird thing.
Yeah,
meaning, and of course, it's not on purpose, but I think there are a lot of parents in your stage that maybe haven't connected these dots, and the distance with their grandkids, even their adult kids, is because they haven't been open to the fact that maybe they have to actually think about some of this stuff a different way.
Yeah.
Like what you just said, like if they weren't comfortable with it, we wouldn't parent over them. There's a lot of parents that think, well,
they're not doing our
kids,
all these things.
Our kids aren't doing it right. Yeah.
So I gotta do it.
We had this lady come up to us, an older lady. It was the saddest story. She started telling us about all sorts of different dynamics with her family and her kids and adult kids. And the whole time I'm just sitting there thinking, this is so sad. You think you're so right, but really you're so wrong. Yeah. And your kids just want you to partner with them. But she was so gone in the sense of the way she was communicating. You could just see like, these aren't dots that are going to be easily connected in this moment. It's going to be a huge stretch. And what she's longing for so desperately, she actually has a ton of power to change and influence and help, yet she's identified the problem in her own children rather than to take responsibility in herself. And I think for all of us, kids and adults, you know, adult parents, adult kids, everyone needs to take responsibility for themselves. Yes. Like you're talking about, like, I don't want to overparent. I don't want to, like, that's you saying, I'm not going to be the kind of person that jumps in and overdoes it with us. And so I think, anyway, there's a lot there with that.
You know, in Romans 14:13, therefore let us stop passing judgment on one another. Yeah. I think that should be like, my mom used to cross stitch things, you know, if you have anything on your wall, gosh, I think that one is something our whole culture needs remember. Stop passing judgment on each other. And then over in 15:7, accept one another. Mm. And I think that's like a key for every good relationship, whether it's grandparents to their adult kids or grandparents to their grandchildren and all vice versa. We're people in process. And I think it should be that the older we get, the more aware of our frailties and our sinfulness. In the most beautiful way, we should be more aware of the log in our own eye and that's stop good. Pointing out the speck in somebody else's eye. Because to me, that would be a logical part of growing closer to God. The closer you get to his beauty and his holiness, and the more you understand how he is to you, the more you see, you know, the stark difference between who I am and who he is. So that should be normal, but instead, it seems like as we get older, we just kind of become less self-aware in some ways and more like defensive.
Oh, don't worry. There's plenty of us that can be not self-aware in our young age too.
We have a new offering for you. If you would like to receive daily or weekly text messages and encouragement around parenting, marriage, with prayers and scriptures, click the link in the show notes and we would love to send those to you. Can't wait to connect more with you.
You know, the verse she quoted, we're going to teach on this on Sunday. It's Romans 15:7. Yeah. We're talking in a marriage context, but the word accept one another, how just as Christ accepted you, he accepted us completely. He didn't tell us to do A, B, and C, and D and do this right. Mm-hmm. And then I'll accept you. No, it's like we're accepted in the beloved, and then he begins to mold us. But it also can be translated, the Greek word translated, accept, welcome, welcome each other. So I think that we need to welcome our adult children and also be hospitable towards. So it's like, it's not like I'm the parent and I'm going to watch you, you know, see how you do, you know.
Yeah.
You better raise your kids the way we raise you. That's going to be a disaster, you know. Oof. And so I think that we have the privilege of pouring into our grandchildren a heritage, because we're the matriarch and patriarch now. And you can give this to your kids even if you didn't receive it, because Christ has changed your life. You know, I was looking at a different verse, babe, and that came to my mind was, because in your later years, you can get really selfish.
Yeah.
So, you know, no kids around, you can keep the house neat, you can, you know, so it's easy, especially if you are only around people in your age and stage. Oof. It can get cloistered and, you know,
self-focused, self-righteous,
and all this stuff. But I was thinking of the words of 2 Corinthians 5, Jesus, he died for all. He died for all of us, that they who live should no longer live for themselves.
Yeah.
But for him who died and rose again on our behalf. So I've been living for him, and he gave these kids to me, to us, and these grandkids to us, then we're not to live for ourselves. We have the privilege, through to the glory of God, to pour our lives out as long as we can. And that's what it's like serving the Lord. You just, and then you can't ever pour out more than he can pour in. You know, Paul, the Apostle Paul said, I poured myself out as a drink offering. Like I poured everything out on the sacrifice and service of your faith. I gave everything. He was single, but he just gave his all to the Philippians and the Colossians. And he lived to instruct and to teach and to pray and to give and to bring people to Jesus. And I think that we get to do that with our kids and grandkids. I mean,
yes.
It's what else would you rather do? And you get to have fun at the same time. So, you know, there's obviously things that we do practically to build relationships so that they want to spend time with us.
Yeah.
But I just think we don't want to live a selfish life.
No.
Because this life is short, you know, and then we're going to have eternity.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a time, we have a set time that we can make a difference. And we're all going to leave a legacy. We're going to leave something behind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what is it? My funeral, what's Scarlett going to remember about me? That's a crabby old grandfather who never really liked me. And
she'll remember the Beach Boys, the Beatles. She'll remember errands for sure. Like the amount of errands that you guys have gone.
You don't want your kids to be glad you're gone.
Or your grandkids.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And my best friend that I got baptized with, he's with the Lord now. He's older than me. I went to his memorial service, Delano.
He managed
our band that we played in for 9 years, and he's 15 years older than me, but he was like my best friend, and we led together. We got baptized together, and he had some struggles in his life, but I was at his funeral and I was asked to speak, and I get up and I just started sobbing, but I watched his grandchildren get up and they were crying, and I thought, oh wow, he imparted into them a kind of love that they're weeping over their grandfather's gone. Yeah. I thought, wow, that's the way it should be, you know. Yeah. And I know what he did. He was constantly taking him to the beach and having taco nights and coming to their basketball games and proud of them and always involved, there. They were in his house all the time, you know. So it's like, so here, these weren't his kids, you know, these were his grandchildren crying. They stood up in a line and they were all crying.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's the reward of doing what this says, not living for yourself.
Yes.
Well, I can't remember who said it. You might remember. But that parental love out of all the other loves pulls the heart out of self-love.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that doesn't stop when your kids become adults and now it's their job to love their kids. That continues. And that's what I've seen you guys do. Is that's continued into the love of your adult kids, the love of your grandchildren. Like, you're still letting that love pull you out of self-love, you know, in a season where it would be really easy to just be like, now it's my time.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there's a balance in that for sure. I look forward to those days.
Yes.
But one more thing I want to touch on before we're done is one thing I've appreciated so much, especially given the fact that I have some neurodiverse kids. Mm-hmm. That, and I think, Mom, you've led the charge in this, and Dad, you've let Mom teach you. And so you both are on the same page with this. Is it would be so easy, given the, like, what was happening, even just in the church at large and in parenting in general, the whole time you were raising us, it would be so easy to look at my kids and some of their struggles and some of their struggles that lead to behaviors. It would be so easy for you to look at it and judge it and say, I'm just not on it enough. I'm just not doing the things enough. And you chose early on, when some of that started evolving with our family, to instead take the approach of, I'm going to learn. I'm going to let Elizabeth teach me. Like, you opened the doors to wanting to know. So I sent you every evaluation, every, you know, you joined us on an appointment getting results from a neuropsychologist evaluation for Birdie because you were fascinated by it and you wanted to know. Like, not only has that made me feel loved and seen and safe and soothed and secure in what I'm carrying as a parent, because I carry a heavy load with those dynamics as a parent. I mean, this morning I had an IEP meeting for Birdie before we started podcasting, and I walked downstairs, you were already here, and the first thing you asked, how'd it go? I've been praying. Like, that's such a gift to me, but it's such a massive gift to my kids, especially the ones that are wired, which they're all wired uniquely. But that has made such a marked difference, and has, I think, also maybe started with my kids, but it's also then helped with how you relate to the other grandkids. And really what it's shown me is you've remained a learner. And you're willing, you've been willing to remain a learner about an area that you were specifically good at. Like, you guys were great parents. It mattered to you. It was really important to you. You were very intentional. You read books. You prayed a lot. You know, you weren't just like, well, I just hope they turn out okay. So it would be very easy for you guys especially to be like, well, we did it all right. All of our kids love Jesus. So let me tell you how it's done. And instead, you're letting us teach you how much the world has changed. Whole nother conversation for another time. The book, The Anxious Generation, I feel like bridges the gap for grandparents and parents now, explains how much stuff has changed. I feel like we should do a whole episode on it.
And just as a pause here, I feel like it's pretty obvious to see that, looking at our generation from our perspective. When we were raising you in the 80s and 90s, we all thought, you know, the world as we know it is coming to an end, and boy, this is so hard. But we'd have to be so blind and so foolish and so unaware to not realize this is a completely different world. This, we've never had, people compare it to like the Vietnam years or something like that. No way. This is like such a contentious world that you're raising your kids in, that I feel like even before we were reading some of this stuff, I was trying to make you aware of, don't have your expectation. You can't have the same expectation for your children that was just maybe the norm in the 80s and 90s when we were raising you, because it was such a more innocent, gentler time in America. You know, we were watching the communist walls come down, and there were there's a lot of hopeful things when we were raising you. And the economy was such that we lived in a beautiful home and on one income, an associate pastor's income. It was such a different world. So when you say that, I think that's a really important thing that you don't want to gloss over. Maybe a whole episode, but my generation needs to understand that the world you're raising your kids in, that you're raising our grandkids in, is like a completely foreign country. And it's on us to study it and to learn it as if we're missionaries to the next generation. So we speak their language. So we're eliminating certain words that are triggers that don't mean the same thing that they used to mean. I mean, your kids joke with us because we have all these ideas of what were swear words when we were kids.
Oh, I know.
Are just like normal vocabulary now, but at least say Jesus about it. But we still don't say the words. But I mean, just vocabulary has changed so immensely. And we are missionaries. I mean, that's a whole New Testament concept, dispersed to be able to speak into the next generation. But we have to do that on purpose. But here's another thing. You guys have been so patient and bringing us along. So without condemnation, saying gently things several times, I probably could make a list of, don't say that. It's very nice.
It doesn't mean anymore what you think it means.
What you think it means.
Oh, yes. I love some of those phrases.
Or you including me in that phone Zoom that we were doing with the neuropsychologist. The fact that you included me was a trust. You were hearing a psychologist evaluate the brain and the capabilities of your little girl and grieving. Those aren't positive meetings. Those are like,
they're heavy.
Here's what's wrong. And you invited me into that. There is very much awareness that, you know, I'm standing on holy ground here, and peeking in and learning how she now works.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how
that's true
that affects you.
Yeah.
So you inviting us, you've done this all along. You guys have invited us in, and we've blundered through at times, and you've patiently taught us instead of just rejecting us or being harsh with us. I think that makes all the difference too. That makes you want to learn.
Yeah.
Makes you realize you can learn. I can learn new stuff, new ways of being. And you've also been gracious by the things that we were not able to give you, that we didn't know, that we would say, oh, if only I'd known, but we didn't know.
Yeah.
And instead of making us feel defensive, your graciousness is now teaching us. Like, you're going to teach us now.
If you're enjoying this content and you want to go deeper, we have an amazing resource that we want to tell you about. It's the Intentional Film Series, Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. Now, this is an incredible tool for you for spiritual formation in the family. And we created this film series to help parents in their God-given task to raise and disciple their own children. Now, our hope is that we're able to help you and give you some of the tools that I know we so desperately need as we're in the process of raising our kids, and Phil and Diane have actually raised their kids. This is a 9-session film series on the process of what raising a passionate Jesus follower actually looks like. There's some workable solutions in here, there's a bunch of wisdom from the scriptures, and there's a bunch of practical help in your journey as you are raising your children. We cover all sorts of things like parental roles, goals versus values. What is discipline versus punishment? How do I create a heart of obedience in my child where they actually want to obey? What does a heart of self-control look like? Or how do I even help my child in the process of character development? We cover that and so many more things. You can use this film series in a variety of ways. You can use it at your home, preferably with your spouse if that's applicable, with a group of friends or in your community, or even through your local church. All you need to do is head over to our website, intentionalparents.org, click on film series, and then follow the prompts. We have a bunch of other resources there that you can check out, but we do pray that this blesses you in your pursuit of raising passionate Jesus followers.
And I think I think it was Sally who said to me once, Sally Lemos, who we've done a bunch of episodes with her, but she was saying, we don't revisit the past and our childhood and our wounds and look at what our parents weren't able to give us. The purpose of that is never to cast blame.
Yeah.
That's not why we do that. It's not helpful. It doesn't actually bring healing.
Yeah.
But it is important to look at the things that were maybe missed and to acknowledge how that was hurtful. But it's so that we can heal. It's not so that we can distance ourselves from our family and blame somebody.
Right.
You know, and I think that's important. That's so important,
really important.
Because I can authentically say I could name certain things that were hurtful or patterns that were maybe hurtful to me, that weren't hurtful to my siblings,
and then
I can have a ton of compassion because you're such good-hearted parents. Had you known or had I vocalized things, there were nothing I vocalized. Had I vocalized them, you would have totally pivoted.
Yeah.
It's not your fault. Like, I don't view it as your fault. And I think that, and I know that's tricky and some situations are much harder and more acute. But I think that's important that, like, to any of the, you know, I don't know how to name all of them. I just keep saying our peers, but like the younger, not, what did you say, what did you call
the
this episode?
Parents. Maybe
what did
the
you call this episode?
This is an episode for the elderly.
Yes, the non-elderly. I think it's really important how we communicate that stuff really matters. I think
it does.
We can only even talk about it if the elderly,
I usually say the wiser generation.
The wiser generation.
That's usually what I say.
Like, you guys are the ones that open or close that door.
Yeah.
But we are the linchpin on if that door remains open.
Yeah. Yes.
In how we communicate that.
Yeah.
And so I think that's so important. Like, you have to go on your own journey of feeling all the emotions, the anger, the pain. But that's not a journey that you necessarily drag your parents through the mud with.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No.
Anyway, that's a whole other conversation for another time.
That's a good conversation to have.
Well, you were saying to Diane, and that she brought me along, that, you know, entered your world, and you welcomed us into that world. So I think in grand, you know, just for the grandparents that will be listening to this, or, you know, the parents that will want their grandparents to listen to this, you've invited us to join you in your journey. Mm. All right.
Yeah.
And we're doing this podcast, and if you're watching it on YouTube, you can't see, but our friend Alex is in the room, who's on staff with us, and
Hello,
Alex. When we were talking, he's telling us about a couple we haven't even met yet, who, when any one of their kids calls, hey, can you come? We need you. They drop everything and they go. And so it got me to thinking, and this is kind of random, but there's an application here. In the
90s,
there was a move of God through a man named Henry Blackerby, who wrote a course called Experiencing God.
The
whole concept is find where Jesus is working and join him in his work.
Yes.
I would say to the grandparents, find what your kids are doing and what they're working, because parenting is hard work. Elizabeth, in the Motherhood Retreat video inviting moms to come, you said something like, motherhood is beautiful and it is hard. We get to come alongside and join you in your work. And I think it's Jesus working in you, and Jesus working in your kids, and Jesus working in us, and Jesus creating a family where he's the foundation. And we have a part to play as grandparents. So it's not to go off and do our thing. It's we get to join you and help you do your work and hopefully make it lighter. And, you know.
Yes.
So we get to undergird, we get to reinforce, and we get to be involved and come alongside to help. So
thank you, truly. From the bottom of our hearts, it's making such a difference in our own lives, like having parents who are willing to shoulder the load with us. But the impact it's having on our four kids and the desire for a relationship that they have with you is so, so beautiful. They want to be known and seen by you because they are known and seen by you. And they every day ask to go to your house and to be with you. And, you know, you've got a 15-year-old boy who delights in watching the news with you and talking about politics and all the things. Beautiful.
And, you know, I think it is, I love this theological term that just so appeals to me. It's for parents and grandparents. It's that we have an opportunity to incarnate the love of Christ. So if I want my grandchildren to grow up to love God with all their heart, mind, soul, and strength, it's not going to be because I instruct them or I teach them or I lecture them or tell them what to do. It's going to because I've actually lived the love of Christ and shown them what he's like to them, which will make it so much easier for them getting that from you guys and then getting it from us to be able to say, oh, I know what my father is like. I get who the Spirit, I understand the comfort of the Spirit, because when I was staying with my Amma and I was scared and I was anxious and I was, you know, dysregulated, she wrapped her arms around me. She said the things I needed to hear, and her heartbeat regulated my heartbeat. And that's what the Holy Spirit is. That's who the Holy Spirit is. So that's our hope. And the fact that he would use us as frail, difficult sometimes people is nothing short of miraculous.
Yes. I also think it's important to highlight that as we're all talking, it's very important, but you can't have healthy relationships with your adult kids, or, you know, adult kids with your adult parents, unless both are involved. Both have to be a part of it. It's like any relationship. Our marriage doesn't work unless both of us choose to love, will the good of the other, biblical love. It doesn't work. And so I would say what helps all of this is that we we love you guys, but you also love us. And we're thinking, okay, how can we make this not as hard on you? And you're thinking, how can we not make it as hard on them? And, you know, it's that back and forth. And I think it's really important to just say, if you're in our stage of life, Elizabeth and I stage of life, and you're just waiting for your parents to do this so they can do the thing they're supposed to, so you can be served and you get what you're owed, like, you're missing the whole point. That's not actually fully the point. Like you said, we also have a responsibility to make it easy for you, something that you also desire, something that is possible for you to step into. And so I just think I can't understate that enough, because I think there's so much to that part of it, that one or the other, often where I see it get confused is one party gets entitled, I'm owed this, whether it's the parent, like, I'm owed your attention because I created you and you wouldn't be here otherwise, or the vice versa. And so I think it's just important to hold that tension, to remember we all have that responsibility. And really, that's all what Jesus teaches. He teaches us all to live in that tension, and beautiful things emerge, you know, I think. And let's be also very transparent. It's not always easy. It's not like we don't have problems, or we don't have to work through things, or it's not like I don't make fun of Phil. I still make fun of Phil all the time because I love him and he loves me. And I actually appreciate, even recently, you've been getting some of these jokes even quicker and better. And I'm just like, I can't believe it.
Work here is done.
It's been almost 20 years. I've known you for more than 20 years, actually, or 20 years, a little more than 20. So it's just so funny to see all of that. But man, what a gift it is when you can all do this together. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal. I think that's all we have to say for today. I think we're out of words, which is hard for us to say.
No, right? I have more words. I'm holding back.
I'm thinking of more stories I could tell.
Yeah.
I think we should call.
Me too. I think that's often our struggle
to teach.
Yeah, so let's be clear. We're not out of words, but we do want to honor how long this is. So everybody, wherever you're tuning in from, thank you for listening and thank you for joining us today.